Christopher Nolan's film The Odyssey has burst onto the scene as this summer's must-see blockbuster. But what makes an ancient Greek poem into a timeless classic for generations to retell? And how much in The Odyssey is fact versus fiction? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss our fascination with The Odyssey and the University of Cincinnati's connection to the city of legend in the epic poem are University of Cincinnati Associate Professor and Historian of Ancient Greece, Calloway Scott. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Yeah, and I'll ask you to scoot just a little bit closer to your microphone. And UC Junior Research Associate and Archivist Jeffrey Kramer. Thanks for being here, Jeff. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. Jeff, let's start by sorting the fact from fiction. For many, many years, scholars debated whether the city of Troy even existed. Can you talk about the role that Carl Blagan and the University of Cincinnati played in helping to answer that question?
Absolutely. So the site was discovered by Frank Calvert, not Heinrich Schliemann, the legendary excavator who is most associated with the early excavations at Troy. And then another individual, a German scholar, joined Schliemann. His name was Wilhelm Derpfeld. But when his excavations finished in 1894, the site was unexplored until the University of Cincinnati expedition to the Troad, as it was officially called, was led by William T. Semple, the chair of our department, and Carl Blagan, the professor of Greek archaeology, who, of course, was the field director, and uncovered and answered a number of questions that still remained from those earlier excavations.
Yeah, and that was in the 1930s that
The 1930s. He excavated from 1932 to 1938 at the site.
Yeah. Calloway, why was that time period so ripe for excavation? Were people at that time just particularly interested in Greek mythology and all that history and those stories?
Well, within the American academic institution, we were really beginning to develop scientific methods for excavation, but also the American research university on the model of the Germans was beginning to really crystallize and get a momentum of its own, with Greek and Latin as the kind of cornerstone of that educational system. So with this kind of happy confluence of institutionalization and these foundational forms of education, you really had a happy kind of synthesis of a happy momentum leading to these excitements.
Yeah. Jeff, can you talk about the most important archaeological contributions that Carl Blagan and his team made? I mean, you mentioned he didn't discover the site. That had been done, you know, decades earlier. But what were his big contributions?
Well, I can build on what Calloway said, really the scientific excavation of the site. Because when Schliemann excavated, and even Derpfeld to some extent, the science of archaeology was still developing. It really was in its infancy. By the time Blagan came to Troy, he had already excavated in Greece extensively, and a number of methods had changed. So while he certainly did uncover certain aspects of the site and answer certain questions, it really was the application of the scientific methods that he applied. He did, however, excavate an area which does show a destruction that was human-caused. So the site of Troy is a series of nine cities on top of each other. And the seventh layer, especially the A part of that, because we divide things into very small layers, was the area where it was very clear that some sort of human agency had participated in at least part of the destruction of the site. Mm-hmm. The sixth layer, which was known for its massive walls and such, was thought earlier to perhaps be the time period of the Trojan War, but it was destroyed by an earthquake. So, but one thing Blagan did make a point of saying is that he did not discover the Troy of Homer. Mm. This was simply a site that is a very real site, one that can be visited even today. It's not the mythological site of Troy that's in Homer, which is more akin to a kingdom far, far away.
Mm. Well, so Calloway, what does that tell us about, you know, this human-caused destruction that Jeff just talked about in this really interesting way? Does that mean, do we know if the Trojan War happened or not. What do we know about that?
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question, especially on social media right now, right? And the answer is yes and no, right? In interesting ways, what we're really seeing with this man-made or this human-caused destruction event is not isolated to Troy at this period, right? We're actually looking at, and the film kind of gestures towards this itself, a kind of decline, a civilizational decline. We have these massive palaces that stretch from mainland Greece all the way into the Near East and Egypt, and all of these palaces are in frequent and high-intensity contact with one another during the course of what we call the Late Bronze Age. But it's around this time that the epics are set that these palatial centers are beginning to decline and collapse. Mm-hmm. Homer and the Homeric texts actually know nothing about this period of collapse, right? That's how we kind of know that there is something lost between this Late Bronze Age and the time of Homer. But what causes these collapses in the Late Bronze Age, that's a very complex cocktail of man-made, possibly geologic, possibly environmental factors that are very difficult to disentangle from what written records and material records we have. So what we can say is that the Homeric epics recall in a kind of distant and faint way from the material records this ancient and glorious past, but they're interpreting them with the society and the technology and the norms that instruct the day-to-day life of a Greek in 750 BCE.
Hmm. Well, we're talking about the University of Cincinnati's connection to the Odyssey. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Okay, Calloway, you kind of burst our bubble a little bit on the Trojan War. What about the Trojan horse? Has there been any evidence discovered that there was this big old wooden horse? Jeff is spoiler alert, he's shaking his head no.
Yes, we have no real evidence that any such stratagem was employed in the Late Bronze Age, nor in the time of the actual composition of the Homeric epics and their textualization. Probably in the 8th century BCE. However, we do have really fascinating iconographic, right, that is, images of the Trojan horse on pots from a pretty early period, which tells us that, this is not just a fixture of Homeric poetry. There are lots of different kind of pieces of evidence that show us that the Homeric tales were really widely spread throughout not just the Greek world, but also the Mediterranean world broadly. So the Trojan horse is a piece of kind of epic furniture, right, that you kind of just like plop down in your narrative amongst a bunch of other pieces of epic furniture. And it's sort of the like great joy of the classicist and the archaeologist to, try and fit these pieces of furniture into what would be the Homeric living room.
What were those great pieces of furniture that Carl Blegen helped find, Jeff?
I think establishing that the site of Hisarlik, which is what it was called, is indeed Troy, added to that idea that this site was a real site. And of course, with his connections in excavating other places, such as the Palace of Nestor Pylos, which is mentioned in the film as well. And in the poem, Telemachus first visits Pylos. Basically, what he's doing is he is showing there is something occurring, as Calloway mentioned, toward the end of the Late Bronze Age. Whether you want to call it 1177 BC, like Eric Klein did in his book, or whether you want to assign a broader time period, there is something that is going on. So he was able to show that these societies were indeed grand, and grand at the level that Nolan shows in his film. but certainly not by the time that Homer is composing, if there was a Homer, of course, is composing these epics.
Yeah. Gosh, if there was a Homer, of course, that's a whole other can of worms we could get into, I guess. But so Calloway, how much does the Odyssey, whether you're talking about the epic poem or the film, which we'll get into a little bit, how much does that actually reflect ancient history? Do we know?
There's a not to bore the audience with scholarship, but there's a really famous essay basically asking, how can one do Homeric history without getting a headache? Because sorting through the layers of what is fabulous narrative, what is a, you know, oral memory that is transmitted over a couple hundred years, which is possible, and what is kind of fabulated based on the enormous material remains, right? I mean, we have to imagine these 8th century Greeks surrounded by enormous citadel walls without any explanation of who built them, why they were built. In fact, it later gets called Cyclopean masonry because we can only imagine the superhuman strength that's required to create these you know, massive circuit walls. So it's really, really hard to sort out what's fact and what's sort of a fiction within these poems. I like to single out one specific example of the kinds of material remembrances you can have. In book 10 of the Iliad, you get the description of this boar's tusk helmet that Odysseus wears. And indeed, in the Mycenaean finds, we have discovered a almost exactly identical boar's tusk helmet, right?
Oh,
which
wow.
isn't to say that, right, this is the helmet that Odysseus wore at Troy. No, it's a reflection of the fact that these kinds of materials remain, and 8th century Greeks were trying to make sense of it through these narrative tales. Where do we come from? What is our material inheritance? And this is the epic, this is the core of epic, right?
Yeah. So have you all seen the movie?
Yes.
What'd you think, Jeff?
All right, I'll give my opinion, then Calloway will give probably a slightly different one. I greatly enjoyed it. I went in with cautiously optimistic that I would, because I know of Christopher Nolan's previous films, I've seen them. And so I was hoping that he would be able to provide something that was less fantastical than you see in some of the earlier movies, especially the 50s, 60s, and 70s. As enjoyable as those are, they certainly are dated. And from my point of view, he delivered. I would recommend seeing it, especially on a big screen. The caveat that I would add is, of course, this is Christopher Nolan's Odyssey, not Homer's Odyssey.
And not a history lesson, as we've
learned. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Well, have you seen it, Calloway?
I have.
What did you think?
I'd like to pick up where Jeff left off, which is with the caveat that I also went into the film with the understanding that, you know, this is going to be Christopher Nolan's Odyssey. It's not my Odyssey. And I'm going to, you know, parse it as such, let's say. And what I thought was really, really laudable were the visual effects, his commitment to sort of eschewing CGI where he could, that really brought the audience into the epic. And I think that that is an impulse that should be rewarded and repeated. However, I do think that Nolan, in his focus on the film, is kind of a parable about the collapse of international order, rules-based law, and PTSD, unfortunately flattens out a lot of what makes the Odyssey a classic. And we may want to talk about what makes a classic in a little bit. But a lot of the highs and lows that are the definitive characteristics of epic and the Odyssey in particular, I found to be really flattened out, to be more two-dimensional in this kind of focus on how do we deal with trauma? What are the wages of, you know, technology and war, and when they're applied without thinking? important messages, no doubt, but they reduce the importance of the epic, I think.
Homer became more of a human, I think, than this heroic figure. Maybe that would be a way to...
Odysseus, you mean?
Or excuse me, Odysseus, yes.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about what makes this such a classic, because this is an ancient story. People have been remaking it, telling it from different perspectives for generations at this point. What do you think is the staying power of the Odyssey, Jeff?
I think the Odyssey, as well as the other poems of the cycle, such as the Iliad and other works that then were created afterward, but perhaps based on earlier traditions, really do speak to the human condition. Why are we doing this? And especially if you think about the Odyssey in particular, Calloway mentioned PTSD, you're talking about a person who is deployed overseas and all he wants to do is go home. Penelope and Telemachus represent those families, friends who only want their loved ones to come home. I mean, granted, that's narrowing the Odyssey quite a bit, but the idea that this is the human condition and people 3,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, are the same as they are today. We have those same dreams, desires, we have those same problems, technology notwithstanding.
Yeah. What do you think, Calloway?
Yeah, I'd love to just piggyback off of what Jeff says and, you know, reemphasize what I think the nature of a classic is. And that is a piece of literature that you can return to multiple times in your life, and the meaning is going to be different accordingly to your different walk of life. And it's not necessarily just because you are different, but because you are able to see something different in that poem or that novel or what have you. And the Odyssey was the first, for me, work that actually made that real. You know, it's a poem that I can return to and say, oh, I missed that. And now that feels like it's the key to not only unlocking the poem, but it's key to something that I'm understanding in this world, right? It's not just about, you know, literary criticism as an exercise that I undertake as an academic. It's how I interpret the world that I inhabit. And that has always been the power of the Odyssey in particular, but the classics more broadly for me.
Yeah. I think about even some of the language in the Odyssey and Homer's other works, the Trojan horse. We've talked about how it's just a metaphor that continues to be used today. Achilles' heel, that's an idiom that we, you know, take from the Odyssey. Is that the mark of a classic too? Do you think that there are these images and this language that just continues to resonate? I don't know if either of you have thoughts on that.
Absolutely. I mean, these are not only texts that we can return to and find something new, right? It's important that these texts actually structure our literary vocabulary, right? The ways that we actually think about the construction of literature itself, but you know, that trickles down into more mundane daily turns of phrase. And I, in my experience in teaching at the undergraduate level, right, being able to use those as Trojan horses, as it were, to, you know, hook people in, right? To kind of smuggle in the timelessness of these texts. That's always valuable in and of itself.
Yeah. Jeff, I was really interested in your take on the movie because you know a lot more about this site and the history than a lot of people based on your understanding of Carl Blegen's work and what, you know, how all that was documented. And now if people want to know more, they can explore all that online through UC's archives, can't they? Or a lot of it.
A great deal of it, yes. We do have some issues with one of the archives that we had in terms of the accessibility of these photographs. But from Blegen's excavation, we have scanned over 9,300 photographs and over 100 notebooks. And of course, the excavation notebooks are so revealing because it explores what the individuals were doing on a daily basis. There's so much of the individual, of the excavator, that was poured into these notebooks.
Yeah.
That you can then see what they were feeling that day. And also the trials and tribulations of excavating such a site.
Sure. It would be fun to see how many more people tap into that after this watching this movie. I've been talking with University of Cincinnati associate professor and historian of ancient Greece, Callaway Scott, and junior research associate and archivist, Jeff Kramer. Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.